Everybody's adjusting to COVID-19 and trying to see what the new normal is and trying to dig out of the hole that we've created for ourselves here in the last 2 or 3 months. Take, for example, Neil Smotrisk. He's the 16th president of the 129-year-old University of North Texas. And I can't imagine the balls that you have been juggling. Mr. Smotrisk joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
It's great to be here, David.
You know, I think about it. So you've got 40,000 students. You've got 4,500 employees. You've got regents. You've got parents. You've got sports fans. Are you getting any love from any of them?
You know, the support's been remarkable, to tell you the truth. People understand that we're in a tough situation and that it's a whole lot better when you circle the wagons and shoot out than when circling the wagons and shooting in. So we've really had a great team. We've had great support from our regents. We've had great support from our donors and our faculty and staff members. So I'm feeling like we've come through this. We're coming through it as well as you possibly can.
But it seems like there's always something right around the corner. My guess is you spent the last couple of months trying to figure out, you know, how do you wind up the school year and, you know, get all the materials out and put on some sort of a graduation. I guess you've got that under your belt at least.
Well, we do, but we haven't had a walk across the stage. We had 4,800 students graduate, which is 3.4% more than last year. So that's the good news. We've managed to get kids going and graduating then. But we've got a summer enrollment that's looking like it's going to end up being about 15% up before we're done. And most of our students look like they're going to come back next year. So that's all the good news. But, you know, there's a lot that goes along with this whole COVID challenge that we're facing here. The university's pretty depopulated right now. And, of course, that means we lose money. There's financial holes we've got to dig our way out of. And now what we're saying to ourselves is, well, let's hope there's no spike and we plan on something like a normal return to fall.
You must have, you know, 4, 5, 6 different scenarios. What, you know, how many people will they let you have back into a classroom? And does anybody come back? And when do they come back?
How
do you plan for something like that?
Those are all great questions. And where we've got a group right now, we've got 5 different committees who are working through all of the granular problems. But the general charge that I've given them is figure out how we can have face-to-face classes in a safe and reasonable fashion come fall, especially where the experience really matters. So we've got the biggest music school in the country. Well, kids aren't coming to the music school to have remote instruction. They're coming to music school so that they can sing and play instruments and, you know, be around each other and learn and network. Kids in our art program, we've got the top-rated design program in the Southwest. They're coming back because they want to be in the studios and they want to learn from each other. People love that campus experience. And what we're hearing from even the incoming students, our freshman population, is we want to come back and get something that isn't like what we just graduated with from high school. We want to have the normal college experience. We want to go to football games. We want to go to class. So we're going to make sure our freshmen get classes that inculcate them into what higher learning in a university setting's like.
You know, I would guess one thing you got to do is inventory all of your facilities and see what can be utilized, because you're going to have probably more spacing than you do now. Are you opening up some facilities that you haven't used for classrooms before, do you think?
Oh, yeah. This is really a fun time. We're looking at everything. If we're not going to be able to hold large events, certainly our ballrooms and a lot of our convention and large spaces are going to get converted into classrooms. But, you know, there's no classroom that we can find that could seat 200 people.
Yeah.
So our 200-person programs will all be online asynchronous. In fact, we've got a terrific online development group. They're very advanced, and we're really making those classes outstanding right now. And I think now that kids have had a taste of them, they're more likely to participate. We're going to probably still have some remote classes also. But we'll take those 200-person lecture halls. We'll socially space them, and I don't know what the count is, but let's say 50, 60 kids can be taught in one of those lecture spaces. And in the smaller lecture spaces, we'll scale down accordingly. Of course, we'll ask kids to wear masks. Mm-hmm. We'll have protection for the faculty. We won't put anybody who's at risk in that kind of a circumstance. And I'm talking about maybe we can open up the super pit, you know, and have some classes over there.
It would seem like a good use of the facility. I would guess summer school gives you sort of a dry run for what's going to be a larger population come September.
Well, for sure. Summer is mostly remote right now, but come summer two, the second summer session, we're going to open up to face-to-face instruction because there's a whole lot of people, especially in the research areas, who really need to be back on campus. They can't do their research, and the graduate students can't make progress without it. So we're going to be opening up for them. That'll be a dry run, and we'll see what happens come fall.
You know, you've been there. You're in your seventh year right now, and I think about the last 7 years of UNT, and it's really been a great period. I looked, 72 of the academic programs are ranked in the top 100. Nobody ever used to get very excited about your football team. They do now. I would guess in the old days, the football team used to be like a money-losing proposition. But now it's a money-making proposition. Are you going to make anybody out of football?
Yeah, not likely. But you know what? It doesn't cost us as much as it used to. How's that? There's very few teams in the country that make money on football outside of some of the big, even the top Power Five schools are sometimes dicey. But what I'll tell you is when we put people in the stands and we have, you know, retail sales at the stadium and we have more and more endorsements and more marketing coming around our football program, it's been doing great. And the leadership of Ren Baker, our athletic director, is absolutely terrific. He's probably the hot young AD in the country right now.
Well, I see him showing up on television more frequently. I would hope that would put something in your pocket, too.
Well, it does. And remember, last year we also made it to the show, and then they canceled the darn NC2A tournament. So we got to do that again. You know, we got cheated.
Well, do you think you're going to play football? I mean, I say football, but I mean, obviously, the entire athletic program, that's a big part of going to a university.
Yeah, it's part of the college experience. And I think right now, most of us believe that we'll be playing football. You've already heard A&M and UT saying that. I believe if they're playing, we'll be playing. And the question will be, what are the models that are satisfying for how we populate the stands? You know, we've got a pretty big stadium, and if we can space 10 to 15,000 people out adequately, we can still have a pretty good fan experience without it being unsafe. And, you know, the data now is very, very compelling that when you're in an outdoor event, it's very difficult to catch COVID. Outdoors is a safe place to be.
Right, right. Yeah, because it dissipates. Well, tell me about Frisco, because you've got that campus up and rolling, and I know the plan is to really grow it. Has this been a setback for that?
No, not at all. This is a little bit funny, huh? The Frisco campus right now is up over 100% enrollment from last year.
Wow.
So we're excited. You know, we're going to start building the new campus here pretty soon, up off Panther Creek Parkway there. And I think once that hits, you're going to see that place really take off. The Frisco campus is special, and that business environment out there and the corporate partners that we have are just really dynamic. We've got, you know, Gearbox and a bunch of artificial intelligence companies. We've got all kinds of tech companies that are getting involved, not just with our campus, but with development of curriculum. And, of course, don't forget the Dallas Cowboys are our partners as well. And we're doing great work with them in our sports management program that we're co-branding.
You're right. I mean, that certainly is a hot spot. So tell me what you've had to deal with, too. We've read about class action lawsuits or demands for refunds, questioning the quality of the education if it's done. It had to do with distance learning. Have you had to deal with any of that?
Well, there's always complaints. And, there's always a group of students who think that they're not getting what they need to get out of something. But, you know, those were fairly few voices. I think by and large, people appreciated the way we made the transition from face-to-face to remote and online. And by and large, people are satisfied with their experiences. Were there some rough spots? You bet. You can't do something this massive without having some flies in the ointment. But here's a really great thing. Our faculty, who it might have taken us 3 or 4 years to get, you know, to where we are today with interest in online and remote education and flipped classrooms and all of these modern innovations. After the faculty have experienced it now, we have faculty who are really enthusiastic about improving the quality, doing better. We built a what I call a class in a box kit for them. And so far, about 700 of our faculty have taken it, and about 200 or 300 more are scheduled to take the training. And they're enthusiastic, and there's some really creative experiments going on. So while it's a challenge, and while I'm not sure that the quality was everything it could have been in at the initial phase, right now, I think we're getting pretty darn sophisticated. And frankly, I think we're better than most of the competition at being able to put really good, interesting, and high learning outcome programs together, whether it's remote or face-to-face. So let's see how this works this fall.
That's good to hear. Let me ask you one last question, a little off the wall. But looking at your background, I mean, you're a research biologist. And considering all that's going on right now, everybody fast-tracking for therapeutics or, you know, looking for vaccines, this must be a fascinating time for you to observe.
Oh, it is. I mean, this is, you know, gosh, you've heard the word unprecedented overused, but it's a good word for this. What I wish is that there was a bit more cogency, a bit more of a Manhattan Project around developing the vaccine. But of course, you know, companies that are doing it are for profit and they protect their intellectual property. But the race for the cure, as it is on. And I believe that right now we're learning how to handle emergency situations and virus challenges. And, you know, as the world population grows, there's only going to be more of those at warp factor speed. And so to me, this pandemic was a wake-up call, but it will leave us in a position to deal with all of the different plagues that could potentially threaten humankind in the coming decades. I'm very excited about the leaps and bounds that we're making, especially in kind of the genetics and the therapeutical angles. And by the way, speaking of that, as a scientist, I've decided that we're going to try to head down a course of epidemiologically statistical relevant testing to establish baselines. A lot of people say test everyone all the time. I mean, first of all, we don't live on an island, and I think that's important to note. Our students aren't cloistered. They're coming back and forth. They're working. I hear bars are reopening today. You know, the kids are going to get here and do what kids do. So if we were in an utterly insular environment, I think we could guarantee safety. What we want to do now is you can't guarantee safety, but you can establish reasonable baselines. You can monitor testing and using statistical sampling techniques and random sampling that allows you to know what's happening. And then if you see a flare up, you can get on top of it real fast, test and trace and contain it.
Right.
So that's the direction that we're going right now.
You know, your point's well taken. This is maybe it's like the space program. You sit back and just be excited by all of the things that come out of it, all of the unintended things that you learn.
You want to hear a crazy one?
Sure.
This is fun. One of our faculty members, who's a genius at mass spectrometry, has invented what he believes can be a COVID breathalyzer.
My goodness.
Well, we're going to find out if that's the case and, you know, see if we can work forward on that one. But can you imagine what that could do?
I think I'd probably name a building after him. That's what I'd do if I were you. Neil Smotrisk is the president of the University of North Texas. Thank you for the time, and we wish you all the best.
Well, thank you, David. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot. For more of our conversation with Mr. Smotrisk, go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.